Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, thank you.
I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul, and this is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
Indeed it is. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. The World Series, man.
Wow.
We're in full swing.
Yeah.
We're in full swing.
All I got to say so far is, wow, it's been quite the series. Unexpected.
Very much so, yes. It has been. I mean, so last time we talked, it was, you know, CS, the championship series still.
Right.
And I was expecting them to beat the Cardinals handily. I think we predicted 5 games. And then, of course, they
right.
just
it swept them right out. Yeah.
No.
And a little bit less surprising, but at least not predicted by me. Of course, the Yankees lost. And, it did go back to Houston. It wasn't that series wasn't close either.
That's true, but it was close. They made Cole work, you know, or they made Greinke go back. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's ancient history. I think, you know, the Nats beating the Dodgers, beating the best team in the National League, and them barely making it. Right, and I mean, really, they made it on that Soto hit to right field against what's his face for Tampa, right?
Milwaukee.
Buckner's it, and then they end up winning that game. They were down 3-0. They came back to win at midnight, so to speak, and then they were down 3-0 against the Dodgers in LA. Come back to win that game, you know. Soto, of course, doing a lot of that heavy lifting. And a happy belated birthday to that gentleman.
Right. Yeah, just turned 21.
There was only one other guy who had hit a home run on his birthday in the World Series, and he hit 2, and now I forget his name because I did not come prepared today. But it's okay. I was hoping that Soto would do that yesterday, but he did not. Instead, he made an error in left field, which didn't really work out too well for him. But, you know, it wasn't really their game, it seemed like. They left... What, they were 0-10 with runners in scoring position?
Something like that. There was a lot of opportunity that they failed to capitalize on that they hadn't been doing the first two games of the series.
And what's maybe just as scary for them, I think the Astros left 10 men on. Not in scoring position necessarily, but 10 men on as well. Nats left 12 in last night's game. That would be game 3. Now, after the going 2-0 in Houston, I don't think people were expecting a sweep. But, I mean, in that situation, who knows? I mean, you know, they won 8 straight games, tied the all-time record, right?
Right.
They could have kept going. And then I think there's a lot of pressure coming home when you're expected to win. You know, I'm not trying to make any excuses, but for the Dodgers, the same thing.
Especially when it's been 86 years before the home crowd has seen a World Series win.
And they still haven't seen a win yet there. So, yeah, we will see. At least they got a game, though, in the red and white uniforms. At least they got a World Series game. I know that's not
huge.
Exactly what they wanted. But, you know. But, yeah, I mean, Soto, literally 21 years old, he's been doing some pretty amazing things. I mean, the guy is scary, you know. I mean, we've known that for a while now.
Yeah. Well, we see him in the National League.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Willie Akins in game 1 1980 is the only player to hit a home run, and that was his 26th birthday. See, I did come prepared. All right, sorry. That was it. Our trusty engineer Ignatius Palafox looking this stuff up on the fly. Soto homered in his World Series debut, however, game one when he was still only 20, becoming the fourth youngest player in position postseason history to homer in the World Series, trailing who? Three other guys? One of them still playing.
I don't know, right off the top of my head.
Miguel Cabrera, Andrew Jones, and Mickey Mantle. He also became the second youngest player to homer in the World Series, trailing only Andrew Jones, who I believe was 19, and I believe he hit two. Pretty crazy stuff. Yeah. Anyway, Soto also had a stolen base in Game 1, becoming the youngest player in postseason history to homer and steal a base in the same game. Pretty good. Yeah, the youngest had been Derek Jeter at 22, and 96 AL Championship Series. But, I mean, overall, in Game 1, Soto had three hits, including two extra base hits. He became the second youngest player in World Series history with multiple extra base hits in a game, trailing only, of course, Andrew Jones in Game 1 of that 96 World Series. Now, that 96 World Series, I don't think they want to be thinking about that too much, because that was the series where Atlanta took two from the Yankees in Yankee Stadium, right?
Right, and then proceeded to lose. Yes.
Yeah. So that's pretty unprecedented. Now, of course, when you're thinking, if you're a Nats fan and you're a pessimist and you're thinking that, well, we're cursed, especially after losing at home last night, here comes the other shoe's going to drop, right? Like, the curse is coming. They're not going to win the World Series. I don't know. I still think they have a good chance. But, you know, nobody had predicted that they were going to win it, right? I mean, nobody did.
No, but apparently I was listening to the broadcast last night while watching the game, and it was brought up that they're out of 600,000 brackets that were filled up for Major League Baseball for postseason.
Right.
Only some like 2,000 like remain like perfect. So I imagine a percentage of those picked picked Houston to win, and a percentage picked the Nationals to win. They didn't discuss.
Right. I'm sure a very small percentage. Yeah.
Someone did. Someone is, you know,
probably
is bound to win a long shot bet and win a lot of money. But
I don't think it's possible. It's also possible nobody did. But then again, with thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, I filled my bracket out. I was out in like the second round. I wasn't even. I mean, but you know, what are you gonna do? I was thinking, well, maybe I took a few random shots for World Series MVP. I still had Max Muncy, and I, you know, the way that DS was going, I was like, hey, he's looking pretty good. He's the only consistent hitter. You know, I was feeling pretty good about myself, but now I feel terrible, and I'm on suicide watch. But anyway, how scary is Juan Soto? Well, I'll tell you how scary he is. The guy induced the first intentional walk by the Astros season in Game 2. The Nats leading 3-2, runners on second and third with two outs. Ryan Pressly issued the intentional walk to Soto, which I guess means AJ Hinch did.
Right.
You know, I hate the intentional walk. I would if I were a pitcher. It would probably make me upset. But the walk was obviously the first one in 2019, which shows a lot of respect for Soto. Of course, it didn't really work out for Hinch.
it didn't, but an interview I saw with him said that he would absolutely do it again given the same circumstances. He doesn't like the intentional walk, but he will use it if the situation dictates that is the best move, and the numbers told him that was the best mood. And
well, I'm sure those numbers told him that at some point during the regular season, and he chose not to accept that. So that, yeah, I don't know,
he did get the ground ball. It just was just out of reach of Cabrera, and you know, the ball went into center field as a base hit, but the ground ball was there.
It's true. Look, I mean, he's dirty. He's dirty off lefties. He's dirty off righties. You know, he's the third youngest player. Soto, that is. He's the third youngest player to start a cleanup in the World Series behind only Cabrera and a guy named Ty Cobb.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
I've heard of him.
And, you know, so I guess he was probably thinking of the Kershaw game, maybe. I don't know. Soto up against Kershaw and tying the game. And Maybe he was thinking that.
He was just trying to stop the runs at that point.
But why waver from managing 107 wins throughout the season, and then when it really counts? Anyway, I was just actually looking at that against Kershaw. Enough time has passed, and I'm starting to heal a bit. But the home run off Kershaw was extremely notable because he became the youngest player to hit a home run off Kershaw in Kershaw's career, regular and postseason. I mean, wow. He had never given up a home run to a 20-year-old or younger in his entire career. And it wasn't just any home run. It was a 449-foot home run, the longest in Soto's career, although that may have been until the home run he hit in Game 1, which was just bananas. Monster, that thing, it never came down. As far as I know, it's still in orbit. I mean, it hit that damn train track. That's way up there. I've never seen anybody hit a home run.
I've seen a few people hit home runs.
Like maybe Stanton?
Barry Bonds.
Oh, well, did Barry Bonds play at Minute Maid?
Yeah, he did.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that old? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, the Giants have actually a really good record at Minute Maid in that time. That, you know, it was before they switched to the American League. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's true.
There was definitely some Bonds hitting.
And they still had Towels Hill back there, too.
Yeah.
I missed that thing. A lot of people hated it.
Yeah, a lot of people did hate it. I thought it made it very interesting. And really, there's only a handful of times that the ball was even hit out
like
there
six
anyway.
Six times a year, maybe. Yeah, 100%. I thought it was kind of weird and quirky. I don't usually like those. But then again, I think I do. I mean, that's what makes another reason why baseball is so much more interesting than, I think, any other at least pitch or field or court that you could think of when you're thinking of literally any other sport. They're all exactly the same, right? Yeah. A football field, basketball court, hockey rink, soccer pitch. I mean, they're all the exact same dimensions, and so it makes baseball unique. And
and Triple Alley. And it's not talking about anything like major in terms of those differences. They're all, you know, 90 feet down the line.
The infield
is exactly the same, but the outfield is slightly different based on location. I think that is a wonderful part of the game as well. Definitely,
that's true. Yeah, no, it's pretty rad. And maybe the home run looked farther than it was because the Astros have like second shortest left field, smallest left field in baseball, of course, next to only Fenway.
Right.
But I mean, gee, that thing was a monster shot. That Soto home run was just insane. Bregman hit a huge one, and it didn't even come close to that. Anyway, I don't know. Soto is just, he's crazy. I mean, obviously, he didn't have a great game during his birthday, but I don't think this is the last we're going to be hearing from him.
Probably not.
He was a little excited, you can tell, in all the at-bats at home this time. And he even admitted in his very first at-bat when he struck out against Verlander. When he struck out against Cole in that first at-bat, and he was kind of smiling, and he even said later, he's like, yeah, I was a little too excited. You know, I needed to relax. And then he did. He came back the next at-bat, and Cole threw the exact same pitch, and he smashed that thing, you know. He just, you know, I don't know. He's got a great eye. Looking at Game 3, the Astros obviously have new life. They have a bit more energy.
Right, back in the series.
Sort of. I mean, yeah, 100%. They're the Astros. They're the best team in baseball. You can't write them off. They didn't win 107 games by luck.
No, definitely not.
But they're trying to become the 14th team all time to come back from a 2-0 deficit in a best-of-seven postseason series, not even just World Series, and first to do so in the World Series since the 96 Yankees, of course. And that's obviously who they're looking at, and they're trying to recreate that magic. In all series with the current 2-3-2 format, teams that have taken Game 3 after falling behind 2-0 have come back to win the series 28% of the time, 12 out of 43 times. So there's a chance.
There is still a chance. And in order to do it, of course, their number one starter, the ace veteran Justin Verlander, is going to have to earn his first win.
That's right.
In the World Series.
Is that true? Has he never won a World Series game?
In six World Series starts, he is 0-5 with a 5.73 ERA.
Okay. I think you might be able to win a free beer at a bar with that trivia question right there. I mean, it's just
because he's played in so many
He started six World Series games.
All
of them were with Detroit except for 2017 and this year, right?
Correct.
So 06 was his first one?
Yeah, 06 against St. Louis. Took the loss. He took the loss against the Giants in 2012. He started two games against the Dodgers. And took a no decision and one loss.
Yeah, he did.
And and then of course game two.
Yeah.
And took the loss.
Didn't even get the quality start either. Comes out in the seventh
with giving up four runs.
He comes out hadn't given up three, so he was still in line for the quality start. But then Presley proceeded to allow his, because he walked a guy, so he still had a man on base. So, and you could see it in his face. He was just watching. He's like, do not let that guy score. Because obviously he's not going to get the win, but at least he could maybe not get the loss and at least get a quality start. Nope. Still got four on the books there. That was, and then the wheels really fell off after
that. They really did. It was really quite amazing listening to that game just run after run after run. All of a sudden it's 8-2, 9-2. I mean, I just at a certain point, it's like okay, it's time to listen to something else. But
yeah,
I
watched it all. It was great.
I was busy at work, and it was no longer that fun or interesting to listen to. In the ninth inning, it's like okay, it's like 11-0 or 11-2, and it's like okay.
Well, the Nationals were 0-10 with runners in scoring position last night after going 7-21 in the first two games of the series. Washington, they became the first team since 08 Phillies to go hitless in 10 or more at-bats with runners in scoring position in a World Series game.
Wow.
Although it is notable that the Phillies actually won that game, going 0-13 with runners in scoring position to set a World Series record.
So they obviously found a different way to score runs.
Yeah, exactly. Not unlike the small ball that the Astros were playing in that seventh inning in game two. But Robinson Chirinos' home run last night made the Astros the second team to have two different catchers homer in the World Series. Do you know who the other team was?
I do not.
It's your favorite team.
Is it? Really?
Yeah, the Giants, Ed Bailey and Tom Haller in 1962.
Wow, I did not know. That's a good piece of trivia. I did not know.
Yeah,
that.
This is also the first World Series to feature three different catchers homering, of course, with Kurt Suzuki's go ahead in the seventh, and then Martin Maldonado, his little gift home run to make it 12-3 in Game Two. Was that off the foul pole? Oh, no, the one Chirinos was off the foul pole. That was weird. Did you happen to see that home run off the foul pole? It's like a piece of fabric or something. It's not even like a metal bar. It's strange.
I did not notice that when I watched the highlight. I watched it a few times.
Like it hits the foul pole, and then like it's like this ripple comes off. I was like, what is it, made out of mesh? I mean, I knew like the screen in between the foul pole screen was some sort of metal mesh, but like the outer part of the foul pole was like soft. Strange.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah.
I'll have to go back and watch that home run.
Yeah. And then it made me wonder, like, are all the foul poles like that? Because I don't remember that. I remember them being kind of hard, right? And bouncing off hard, you know?
Usually that screen on the foul pole is solid.
Right.
It's like a chain link fence.
Yeah. That's what I thought. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in Washington, D.C. But I do know that our commander-in-chief will be joining in the celebration on Sunday. I shouldn't say celebration. I don't know if they're going to win. And anyway, it doesn't really matter. But that's just going to wreak havoc for traffic, security. I mean, I can't even imagine. Just stay home, Trump.
Didn't he say that he wasn't going to show up at the beginning of the game?
He said he was going to come a little later as not to impede security. But it's going to be a nightmare anyway. I mean,
security's still got to be there to make sure that...
Yeah, they got to be there hours before, right? Getting all the entrances and exits and having Secret Service everywhere. I don't know, man. That just seems like it's going to be such a huge hassle. Although, if it's good for him, if he ends up being, like, on TV a lot, oh, he's going to love that. And now he's going to be at every postseason game probably right. in the future. Right. So we'll see about that. But, you know, watching Zach Greinke and coming out in the fourth, right? And I was thinking about the DH. And you're watching that game last night. It's a totally different game, obviously, because and Hinch isn't used to this, but Davey Martinez is. It's the bottom of the fourth, right? Robles hits that triple, one out triple, and then pitcher spot comes up. He doesn't pinch hit, right? He lets him bat, even though he's like 0-48 lifetime hitter, right? One out. What do you do? I mean, Hinch decided to pull Greinke. Well, although that was in the middle of the
well, Greinke though is a good hitting pitcher.
I know, which is very strange. So in this case, and obviously hindsight's 20/20, but it did not pay off for Martinez. They did not get that run across with a one out triple. Which statistically, if you pinch hit, you have about a 50% chance of that run scoring. He decided not to, and then ends up giving up two more runs. So all the naysayers or all the people that love the DH are probably pointing at that, say, see, we need the DH, But I don't know, how do you feel about this? Because I think that that's the game, but anyway.
Well, I'm not a fan of the DH for sure. I think that the intrigue of what do you do when the pitcher spot comes up adds dimension to the game that makes it, you know, far more interesting to watch and to second guess and to just wonder about, you know, all the what if situations. What if, you know, he didn't pinch it? No.
What if he did pinch it and they still didn't get the run, I guess? Yeah.
Right.
And now he's out of pitcher. Yeah.
Right.
Who had only given up one run. I mean, Sanchez had only given up one run at that point, and they were down only one run. It's tough. That's a tough call. I mean, in the World Series, you know, and during the regular season, I'd say, yeah, let him hit. But I don't know. World Series kind of got a pinch hit, right? I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, but, you know, I mean, that's the differences between the two leagues. That's differences between the two teams that are playing. One is built to play a particular way and the other team isn't, and so when a situation comes up, it's how you perform in those situations that you're not used to, in the high pressure situations that are
it makes sense. Look, I'm sure David Martinez didn't really want to have to go to his bullpen that early, considering the Nationals bullpen historically, or at least this season, hasn't been that good. I don't know, that's tough, that was a tough call, and I'm sure he's gonna get gripe, and I'm sure, again, people that love the DH are going to point to that and say, see, like, how stupid, how boring, you know, who wants to see that? Well, that's the game, you know, you don't get, it's not basketball, you know, it's not football. You can't just give it to your best guy every time. You got to go through the motions. Everybody gets a chance. And normally it's paid off in the past, and I don't know. I thought that was an interesting situation. Of course, they ended up losing, and they never regained the lead anyway, but that could have been a catalyst. And yeah, when you look at the numbers, it really is about half the time. The runner from third with fewer than two outs scores on a pinch hit. I mean, I'm looking at every team. It's 52%, 53%, 40%, 51%, 47%. I mean, it's a pretty close.
Right in that range. Yeah. Right around 50%.
Obviously, hindsight's 20/20, and you know, I'm sure he had an answer to that. But I don't know. To me, that's not a good enough defense to keep the DH in both sides, because it's also cool to see Hinch have to worry about Yordan Alvarez. How, you know, is he going to start? Because he's their DH. You know, you're not going to probably put him in left field. You know, because that is not an easy left field in Nationals Park. Things like the 13th biggest left field in baseball, and they obviously play in the second smallest, so he was on the bench, and he's probably gonna be on the bench again today, and that's awesome, man. Like, that's cool. Like, it should be different, because otherwise, what's the point of playing the Worlds? I mean, you have the American League, you have the National League. They're different, which is why it's cool to see them play, I don't know, differently. I think in 2021 or whatever, when the agreements are reached and we're supposed to see the DH, I mean, it's going to be a sad day. It's going to be a sad day.
I think so, too. Maybe they'll go unexpected route and get rid of the DH altogether, and now these pitchers are going to have to learn to hit like a regular baseball player.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? That would be pretty cool. And speaking of Astros bullpen, you know, if the series goes 7 games, the Astros will be left with Zach Greinke again to start game 7. With, you know, is a possibility that most Astros fans aren't too excited about. I don't think he was pitching that bad last night, although he had over 90 pitches in 4 innings or so. So
He still got the win.
And he got out of a lot of jams, yeah.
And, exactly. I mean, this is why they picked him up.
Well, he didn't get the win, right?
But his situation.
He only went 4 2/3. But, yeah, but right. I mean, he set the team up for a win. Yeah, 100%.
They won the start. And he was the stopper. He stopped the losing for the series at this point.
That is true.
He did his job. That's why they picked him up. I think that if he pitches the way that he did last night in Game 7, that...
Give him a chance. Yeah.
Absolutely, you give him the ball.
Verlander would be available out of the bullpen on 2 days rest for a potential Game 7, and Garrett Cole would be technically available on 3 days rest, although Cole has never pitched on 3 days rest in his career.
Right, but it's game 7. So yeah. What are you going to do? It's the last
That's true.
It's the last possible game that you can pitch in the season, whether you win or lose.
It's pretty crazy, man. The Astros have been using a lot of their bullpen, and tonight's game, Saturday, they're going to have to, it's a bullpen game for them too. You know, I don't know how long they can maintain this.
Yeah, they're going to need a starter to go deep.
But they don't, I mean, yeah, they're not going to, it's going to be, I don't know, 7 pitchers tonight. Who knows? I mean, he's going to use all of them. And Ryan Pressly is not nearly as good as he was before his knee surgery in August. Obviously, Verlander knows that all too well after him coming out in the 7th. You know, he gave up, 5 runs on Wednesday? I don't even know. The Astros won the ALCS in part because they outlasted the Yankees bullpen.
Right.
So even though the Nationals bullpen hasn't inspired much confidence throughout the regular season, they do seem to be in a better position than the Astros as of now. Of course, tonight we'll really find out because they got Patrick Corbin coming. We'll talk about Patrick Corbin a little bit later. But you were telling me that the balls are not juiced. Is this true?
Well, it appears, yes, that the balls being used this postseason are different than the balls that used all of the regular season.
Real.
Baseball, of course, claims that the balls are no different. They come from the same batch as what was used during the regular season.
That's their official position right now?
That's their official position right now. But there was a study done because... the baseball does seem to be dead as compared to it was during a regular season.
Don't tell that to Soto. Jeez, yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, you get a hold of one, you get a hold of one, whether or not the balls are juiced or not. But there was a study done by Rob Arthur of Baseball Prospectus, and his conclusion was that the postseason ball is dead. It's not just the colder weather or superior pitching either. Rob Arthur studied the drag coefficient, which helps determine how far the ball flies, and said it is significantly greater. And with a one in a million chance, the balls are the same as used in the regular season.
Really?
So was
that, do you think, like to help the Nationals?
I don't know if it was just for the Nationals. I think, you know, the...
Because the Astros have, on paper, the better offense, right? I mean, or at least the more power. So,
right.
So would that be some sort of way to tip the scales, but this, but Deus Ex Machina kind of thing.
This isn't just affecting the Nationals and not just affecting the World Series. This is affecting the entire postseason.
Oh, the whole postseason.
The Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals, they their analytical department did a similar study.
Oh, they're pissed.
And they reached a similar conclusion.
I bet they did.
And the Yankees didn't come out and say anything officially about them, but they were wondering about Gregorius's blast that fell short.
Blast that never was.
Right. It left the bat at 100.1.4 with a 41-degree launch angle, and it did not go out.
Interesting. Was it a cold night?
Well, and that's what they're saying.
They're like, that's impossible based on the numbers and the math. Well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, you get a launch angle over 40 and you hit it 100 miles an hour. Yeah, you hit it over 95 miles an hour, and that's usually a recipe for a homer.
Exactly. So baseball denying that anything is different with the balls. Of course, baseball has also denied that there was anything going on with the balls during the regular season.
So what you're saying is we can blindly trust MLB. That's what you're saying, right?
That's I think what MLB is saying. Yes, I think that there might be something going on. I don't know. No, get the home runs during the regular season. A record amount of home runs in the regular season. You expect to see above average amount of home runs in the postseason. That just hasn't been happening.
Well, that's true. The Twins, they were supposed to come out swinging, and they didn't get. I mean, Cruz got one in the first game, but I mean,
yeah, they only hit like two or three home runs that entire season after hitting
postseason. Yeah,
after breaking the record in the regular season, well over 300 during the regular season. So, I don't know.
Cause does not always equal effect, but in this case, it's possible, especially if they said it's one in a million chance.
Yeah, it's one in a million chance that they were the same balls.
Well, then that makes Kurt Suzuki's first postseason home run that much sweeter. Sadly, however, he was removed for a pinch hitter in the sixth inning in game three after suffering a right hip flexor injury. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah,
that sucks. Now he did some strength tests and apparently he seems okay. They were thinking about getting an MRI today because he wasn't going to play today anyway. Because Yan Gomes is Corbin's battery mate. He hasn't been the whole season, but that's tough though, man. I mean, he's been a tough out, let's say, and he's defensively a better catcher than Yan Gomes. You could even argue a better hitter, but so we'll keep an eye on that as they go along. And I mean, Sunday, we'll see. I don't know. It's tough to see a guy leave. I mean, he finished the inning. You could see he was in pain. He finished the defensive inning, but then, came out, was pinch hit for. Now, we saw the oldest man in baseball do something last night, or at least that I thought was pretty funny. We saw Fernando Rodney use the bullpen cart. How about that? Hell, he's like, hey, I'm 42. I deserve this bullpen cart. Give it to me. Now, I take exception to Fernando Rodney's hat-wearing choices. But beside of that, I mean, you know, the guy's a salty old veteran. And he's still throwing gas. You know, he's still
really
like 96. The guy's 42. So, yeah, give him the cart. That was pretty cool. But you had some other stats on Fernando Rodney that I was unaware of.
I did. It was pretty interesting. So, with his appearance in the game, he has now officially pitched in the AL wildcard game, the NL wildcard game, the ALDS, the NLDS, the ALCS, the NLCS, and a World Series for both an AL and NL team.
Wow, that is pretty good, man.
Yeah,
that is insane.
And in addition to all that, though, Rodney has also pitched in an All-Star game for both leagues.
What?
And the WBC.
Hey now. Wow, and the WBC.
And the WBC. Wow. So he's shall we say, been around a bit.
That is pretty crazy, man. I had no idea. I mean, that's like Edwin Edwin Diaz, no, Edwin Jackson territory, yeah, Octavio Dotel.
But for good teams.
Yeah, but exactly. But he's actually helping, not for terrible teams. Is that true? That's insane.
I know, that's pretty incredible.
Well, now I like
incredible.
The guy a lot more now. Now I actually...
Hat wearing aside, I said...
Is it the shoes?
That's pretty
good. No, it's the hat.
Unfortunately, it is, yeah. Apparently, the whole arrow thing... Do you know the origin of that?
I do not know the origin of that.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't until today. Actually, apparently, it's an homage to his hometown, Las Fechas, I believe, or Flechas. I don't know, which is like means the arrow. Yeah, it's like the name of his of like an adjacent hometown in the Dominican, I guess. So I don't know. So it's sort of like he only does it when he wins, obviously.
Right.
It's kind of like a little shout out. It's pretty cool. I'm coming around to that guy. I've had him in fantasy teams like years ago, and he always angered me to a large degree. He's just so wild. And I mean, he started the year on the A's this year, didn't he? And went around a couple teams. And as is tradition, he finds himself on a winning team in the postseason.
Right.
So I guess rats off to you, Fernando Rodney. That is pretty good. Now, on a slightly maudlin note, the Skaggs. We call it the Skaggs Report now? Is that coming out?
The Skaggs Report, yes. A little bit of news I found on that. Not related to the World Series at all, but apparently there was an Angel employee who talked to the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the Angels apparently knew of Skaggs' use of and abuse of opioids.
What, are they ratted him out? They narked him out? Or was this before or after?
This is after the death.
Okay.
This is, I think, probably is part of the investigation into what happened, where he got the drugs and everything.
Right.
But it's a whole bunch of can of worms. But what was found is, Eric Kay, as the Angels Director of Communications, said that... Skaggs and five other players on the Angels have been abusing opioid painkillers, and for at least 2 years has been getting Skaggs illegally obtained opioid drugs, painkillers, but probably not the ones that he OD'd on in Texas, but. It's hard to truly tell.
Yeah. Is that new? I mean, obviously he was getting it from somebody, and
obviously but the Angels, they didn't do anything about the fact that he and the other players were using these drugs. I guess because they're not on the illegal.
Right,
substance
because
use,
they're legal,
not,
because they give it to them.
They're,
you know?
They're not, yeah. They're prescription drugs that there are not performance enhancers, but
well,
if that's, gets rid of the pain so you can go out there and pitch.
Right, but. And I think at that point they were performance enhancers because he probably couldn't pitch without them. I mean, at that point, it's probably not even pain. It's just now you're addicted to it. I mean, it's the number one drug in America. It's no surprise. Like, I mean, people were shocked and... You know, when this happened, like, why is that shocking? I mean, it's the most popular drug in America because it's legal. I'm talking about, like, Oxycontin and, I guess, fentanyl now. Jesus. But, I mean, these guys are athletes. They get a broken knee. They have a hamstring surgery. They have injuries, and then they're prescribed this stuff, and then they're expected to just not be on it anymore. I mean, these guys are young. Their bodies are beat up. They're traveling all the time. Hell, these pills make you feel good. And they're not on any sort of banned substance list, whereas something like marijuana is, which is ridiculous. I'm sure a lot of these guys would rather just, have a beer and smoke a huge blunt at the end of the night and relax their body, but they're not allowed to. But they are allowed to snort Oxycontin, so hey, why not, right? I mean, it's crazy. I wouldn't even blame the people giving it to him, really, because at that point, he's already addicted to it, and the guy needs it, and they're probably afraid to seek treatment because then it's going to make them look bad, blah, blah, blah. I mean, obviously, this doesn't make them look good.
No, it definitely but doesn't make him look good.
The whole attitude for drugs in any professional sport and enabling is ridiculous. I mean, not letting professional athletes smoke marijuana is absurd.
It is.
I mean, especially in the NFL, you see this. I mean, it's still extremely regulated. I think the NBA, they relaxed it a lot because they realized, hey, it's healthier for these guys.
They're going to do it anyway. Yeah. And it is, yeah. And marijuana is far safer than any opioid drug.
Of course.
But enabling any addiction is just such bad news for any organization that claims to be, you know, professional.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to, I mean, if they really are caring for their players and wanting to keep everyone healthy and fresh, got to find a way to not have this addiction be such a problem.
You know, I wonder if it was, you know, it seems so obvious and it seems like, yeah, how could you let him do that? Well, he probably wasn't asking the same person every day. He probably, you know, was getting it here and there, to the common observer, maybe he was just taking a pill every other day or something, or just once in a while, right? But you can't just take opiates recreationally because that it ends up taking over your body, and it's more than just an addiction.
Right.
It becomes a dependency.
Right.
And, you know, if you're really good friends with somebody, and yeah, you should say, hey, go seek treatment. But at the same time, you're in the middle of the season, you know, you need this guy to perform. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to excuse anybody here. I'm not trying to do that. But really, it's the fault of Major League Baseball, I think, in not letting these guys seek alternative therapies.
Right.
Really.
The one thing that I have heard, though, is that it is possible, as starting as early as next year, that Major League Baseball will be testing for opioids as part of the regular drug testing regime.
But
regimes.
They're legally prescribed. How are they going to do this?
They're legally prescribed. They can still see if they're in their system. If they have had a prescription, then they know why it's in there. If they don't have a prescription or the prescription has been over
right
for a given amount of time past the half life of the expected half life of the drug, then I would say they'd probably make it. I don't know if they would punish necessarily the player, but maybe bring to attention, provide some support.
Yeah,
to be able to get off of them.
I think that's it. There needs to be more of a support chain right there, because it's not easy getting off this stuff. In fact, it's virtually impossible. So when you feel alone, you're not going to seek treatment independently. You know, they need to have, just like they have physical trainers and team psychologists, they need to be able to, I don't know. It seems like they're going to demonize it even more. This is the problem with all drug laws. Now, this podcast is getting a little too weird and political, but I think this is the problem, right? You demonize something, and then it makes people that much more reticent to seek treatment, you know?
If you
put it out in the open, and now it's okay, right? I mean, you know, I don't know. Anyway, just let Timmy smoke. Let him smoke. Timmy died for your sins, okay? Just let the kids smoke. All right. Now, on a slightly lighter note, have you been busy lately?
Have I been busy lately?
Yeah. Yes.
In general, yes, I have. Yes.
Yes, so have I. But you have not been as busy as Astros bench coach Joe Espada.
Oh, yeah?
Do you know how he spent his off day between game 2 and 3?
No.
You know what? I got his itinerary right here. I'd be happy to share it with you.
Okay. Go for it. I don't know where this is going.
Espada starts his journey at Houston, right? 7:30 a.m. flight to San Francisco to go interview for the vacant managerial job. 11:30 he lands, 12:30 to 5 he interviews, 6:50 flight back to Washington, gets in at midnight, goes to bed, wakes up, now we got a game 3. I mean, that's a tough, long day. Houston,
that is a long
that's
day.
Almost coast to coast right there. And
Houston to San Francisco hits all three coasts.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it really is. So, is this going to be the Giants' next manager?
I don't know. It's really interesting. The Giants are certainly playing it close to the vest. There's not, I think they're not even finished interviewing everyone they want to interview.
I'm sure.
I think I've heard AJ Hinch's name connected too. So I think they're waiting until the end of the World Series to interview him and you know, see what else is available.
Yeah, but. I don't know if that's gonna happen. Yeah, you could hope, but I don't know. Anyway, that's like 9 hours in the air. But Espada was quoted as saying, "You want something, you go get it." So I don't know. This is like a 5-hour interview. That's a long time.
It is. It is a long time. It's an interesting list of people that have been interviewed so far by the Giants. I have no idea what direction they're going to go.
I think it's good for the Giants. I think it'll be good for them. They really just need to shake it up. They need to almost start over. And it seemed like toward the end there, they kind of were. They were bringing up all these new guys, and they actually weren't doing too bad or too poorly. But unfortunately, you still have the Dodgers in your division, and the Padres have a great pitching farm system, and they've, you know, obviously have a few bats now, so it'll be an interesting next year. And they have a new manager as well. So, yeah. Anyway.
As do the Angels.
That is true. A new old manager.
Uh-huh. Old new manager.
Old new manager?
Mm-hmm. New old, old new, I don't know.
Speaking of rookies, Hinch is going to start right-handed pitcher Jose Urquidy in the World Series tonight. Another bullpen day, eh?
I mean, I guess.
He had a few starts this season, but he posted a 3.95 ERA. Including 4.24 as a starter, his last appearance in that role coming September 27th, where he did get 6 scoreless. So he's a Mexican guy. It'll be pretty cool to see Mexican pitcher in the World Series. It's been a long time since we've seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, I guess we'll have to just get into it right now. Are we going? Yeah.
I don't know. This time you said that you had something more on Patrick Corbin.
That is true. Yeah, Patrick Corbin, who is getting the start tonight, man, he has got one of the weirdest and sort of hardest to gauge pitches in baseball. Usually, you can get a pretty good read on how effective a pitcher is with certain pitches based on common factors. For instance, Garrett Cole's fastball is great because it has great ride and velocity. Greinke's changeup is good because of the plus movement in two dimensions, and like Rich Hill's curveball is insane because it mirrors the spin on his fastball, then just drops off the table, right? And so it's basically unhittable. However, with Corbin, the figures don't really seem to add up. Corbin's slider does not stand out in the way that Jacob DeGrom's hard slider does, or with Noah Syndergaard, Verlander, or even Max Scherzer, by being harder than most sliders with more drop than most cutters. Corbin's breaking ball is also not a power curve like a Lance McCullers or Wade Davis, but it appears his slider turns up somewhere between a typical slider and your typical curve, so I guess you can call it a slurve. However, no slider, so it just seems he's like a basic. It seems like if you're just looking at the metrics, it just looks like a basic pitch. But no slider got more raw whiffs last year, and no slider was thrown more often. But that just means that hitters knew it was coming and still had problems with it, which is insane, right? I mean, his slider, they know it's coming. He throws it way more than anybody else, and they still can't hit it. And on paper, it's not that crazy of a slider. But it's as dominant as any single pitch in baseball gets. So how is he so dominant? When you ask Corbin himself, he says, he's quoted as saying, "I think it's a swing and miss pitch because it looks so much like a fastball. It comes out of the same slot and you can locate it well. The spin must look so much like a fastball since they have so much trouble picking it up. But the problem with that is that the spin direction is 90 degrees different from his fastball." And they found that that had less than 45-degree difference in spin direction, or between 160 to 190 degrees, different, made for the best breaking ball. So he's not even close. So even what he thinks is the main culprit isn't even correct. Anyway, after much research, and I'm just reading the research, I didn't do this research. it appears that the main culprit underlying why and how Corbin's slider is so good can be found in a stat called Command Plus.
Command Plus. Yeah, I've not heard of this.
Yeah, it's. I think we, before the season started, I think we briefly touched on this because this might be this
one
is
of
a,
the new stats.
Yeah,
the
I
book?
Think Baseball Prospectus has a similar stat, or it might even be the same. But this is developed by Stats Perform. It basically judges how well a pitcher can do what he intends to do, with a pitch.
Does it have to do with how often he hits the target set by the catcher kind of thing?
Yeah, or exactly. Where he's supposed to throw it, where he wants to throw it, and yeah, where he actually does throw it. Yeah, so it looks like they've pretty much found why his slider is so good. It's simply his ability to place it. I think he only gave up 6 home runs on that pitch all season, and 5 of those were just hung. They were just, if you look at the heat map, they're literally just hung up there.
They never actually broke.
Yeah. The only one that did was Framil Reyes, and he just somehow figured out a way to just smash that ball. But, you know, he's going to run into a bunch throughout the season anyway. But it's crazy. It's as dominant as any pitch gets in baseball. But when you just look at the metrics, or at least what we consider common or modern metrics, you throw all those out the door. So there is something to say about this Greinke type pitcher, a Greg Maddux type pitcher, right? I mean, Maddux is obviously, I think, when you think of just location and hitting your pitch every time, he's kind of the gold standard. But we'll see tonight. It'll be fun to watch tonight. Keep an eye on that slider, especially to right-handed hitters. It's just dirty. But on a crazier note, he admits that he never even practices this pitch. When he's doing his bullpens, he's just throwing fastballs and changeups and just trying to locate that. So it's almost as if he just has this pitch by nature.
It is his pitch is what got him to be a pitcher, and the rest is warm up.
Anyway, and that brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week. That would be yours and my favorite umpire, or
Angel Hernandez.
No, that guy is just like losing his mind. It's too easy for that guy. No, Rob Drake, the bearded ump, the guy that once threw Justin Turner out this season for waving.
You that soft, bro?
This guy's the worst, dude. I mean, watching this guy behind there, he's so sensitive. So sensitive. Yeah. Hi, Justin Turner waving at him.
One might call him a snowflake.
Yes. Snowball, snowflake. Yes. Anyway, we're not giving him the award just for that. Mm. And I don't know how or why this podcast is turning political, but it's not really.
It's because there was series in D.C., I think it might be.
So on Tuesday, I guess you're right. It sort of brings out the worst in all of us. on Tuesday, Rob Drake threatened on Twitter to buy an AR-15 for war over the impeachment hearings facing President Trump. Okay, all right, fine, whatever. The tweet was deleted shortly after it was posted and read, "I will be buying an AR-15 tomorrow because if you impeach my president this way, you will have another civil war, MAGA 2020. Now, I'm not giving him the Ignoble Award because he loves Trump. No, that's fine. I don't care about that. I'm giving him the Ignoble Award because he can't spell civil war correctly. The guy has a typo in a tweet, man. How many words do you have to proofread? You spelled civil war, civil with an A. It's not even like the wrong variation of the word. Civil war, MAGA 2020. I think that just in a nutshell shows the voting populace for Trump right there. Anyway, I'm not getting.
I don't know.
I'm not getting political. I cannot abide a typo, especially when you're on a grand stage. And by the way, you're an umpire. Just keep your opinions to yourself, bro. Until you retire. All right. You're an umpire 365 days out of the year. I don't care if you're not umpiring a certain game. I don't care. You're in the public eye. You're not supposed to be biased in any regard. Yeah, okay, he's a human being, he's a citizen, blah, blah, blah. No, you're not. You are a robot. You are an umpire. And you're about to be replaced by a goddamn robot pretty soon, so you better keep your mouth shut.
It's looking that way. When the latest report has said the robots are still having trouble with breaking balls high and low in the zone.
Yeah, well, so are the human umps, so it's okay.
So there you go. Actually, 6 of one, half a dozen the other, huh?
No, it's true. In that ALCS game, I was watching Greinke. Man, he was throwing these amazing, like, high curveballs that were on the top of the zone. I mean, they were clear as day, and he just wasn't getting any of those called. He just got none of them called, and you could see his frustration, you know. Now, I'm not advocating robo-umps by any means, but I am advocating good umps and fair umps. Is that too much to ask?
I don't think so, but
Well, then I guess I'll be buying an AR-15 pretty soon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe so.
Rob Drake, we hardly knew ye. And MLB came out. Well, of course, he deactivated his account on Wednesday. He hasn't returned any phone calls or messages. The Umpire Association just basically said, yeah, he chose the wrong way to express himself, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I don't really care. He's not umping this postseason. In fact, I think the last postseason he did was like 2015 or something, so I don't know. Anyway, shave the beard. All right, keep your mouth shut. Sorry.
That goes for everyone, I think, but...
Yeah, you wanted to give the ignoble award to Verlander, and he probably could have rightfully deserved that just by being now the worst pitcher in World Series history. You know, he kind of has like inverse stats with Kershaw. Kershaw is... People always talk about Kershaw being bad in the postseason. He's not bad in the World Series, though. Kershaw in the World Series is actually pretty good. It's just getting there has
getting
been
there
a
is
bit,
tough, yeah.
It's been a bit iffy, but not bad, average. He's certainly not 0-5 with six starts in the World Series. Anyway, is that it? You got anything else for me before we get into the trivia here? I'm just excited for this baseball game.
No, I really don't. No, I'm excited for the game as well. I'd be, I always love the World Series games, but no matter who's playing, it's
yeah,
much more fun when you've got a little bit of a personal stake, but there's still
no,
good
it's
games.
Not. It's not fun at all. And in fact, I don't miss the stress.
You
it's
don't kinda, miss the stress?
I don't miss the stress. I would like a win, but yeah. You know, what are you going to do? It's okay. That's what beer is for, my friend. Yeah. All right. The cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yes, thank you, Homer Simpson, yeah. For that. Yeah, yeah, no, I don't have anything more.
All right. Well,
we can get into the trivia question. Last week's trivia question, of course, was what was the last team for to have no pitchers start at least 20 games? Do we get any answers for that?
Last week's trivia question, what was the last team to not have a 20-game starter? Yeah, this was a hard one, man.
It was a hard one. We haven't had a hard one in a while.
This was a really hard one. So we got one answer.
One answer.
One answer a week and a half. And look, I don't blame him because I have no idea. And this was hard to even look up. I tried to cheat, and I honestly, I couldn't. Google isn't as smart as we all thought it was. Marcel W. in Anaheim says the 2003 Tigers.
2003 Tigers. Wow.
Now, that's not a bad... What, is that right?
It's not correct, no.
Okay.
I think we... Our hint,
actually, I know that's not correct.
We did give a hint, though, that it had been 100 years.
Oh,
Since the last time this has happened. So it's,
oh, I don't remember
it's
that.
Been a while, yes. Yeah, so.
Well, it, look, I mean, the 2003 Tigers, it's not a horrible guess. They lost 100 games before September.
Yeah, that's tough to do, but that doesn't necessarily mean that
right.
You're starting so many pitchers.
And they actually only avoided breaking the modern Major League record by somehow winning five of their last six games to finish at 43 and 119. Now, while I was researching that team, there was another trivia question whilst researching, because in that year, in doing so, the Detroit Tigers became the only team in history to have the top three losing pitchers on the same team. But
wow.
All of them started over 20 games. So, no, Marcel, sorry, you are incorrect. But again, I have no idea. This is the last week's. The week before was too easy. This one's too hard. So,
right.
But I don't know. What do you got?
You got to balance it out somewhere, I suppose. But, yeah. So the last team with no pitchers starting at least 20 games was the 1919 Philadelphia Phillies.
Really?
Yeah.
So exactly 100 years.
Exactly 100 years.
Year of the Black Sox. Interesting. The Phillies.
The Phillies.
So what was the highest? Like an 18 game, 19 maybe?
Something like that. I did not find the actual breakdown of
That's
all
crazy.
The starts.
Because you would think it would be a modern team just because of the way that we use or view starting pitching.
Right, which is why you know that guess of that Tigers team is not so bad. But you know, if you don't have any injuries, you don't have rotation, you just keep throwing the same guys out there, they're going to get more than or at least 20 starts.
And this is going to be interesting also too, moving forward with the opener or the inception, whatever. I don't think we ever got a final answer on what that stat line is going to be, because that would technically be a starter, right?
Yeah.
Teams like the Rays or the Mariners this year. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. That stat might be gone with the wind in the
Could
near
be.
Future.
We'll see if we'll pay attention in coming years to see if more teams fail to have 20 starters or a 20 start pitcher.
I think we're going to see it a lot more often, probably in the future. But who knows? Maybe not. Maybe it'll take another 100 years, and hopefully there's still Major League Baseball being played 100 years from today.
Wouldn't that be something?
That'd be nice. What would that be? 2021? No.
2119.
I'm very good at math, as you can tell. and that brings us to this week's trivia question.
Yeah, you have the question this week, I believe.
Indeed I do, sir. Will Harris.
Will Harris.
Yeah, picked up 5 huge outs for Houston. Harris now has 9 scoreless appearances this postseason.
Scoreless appearances.
Yeah.
In just the single postseason.
Just this postseason. There have been 12 times in which a pitcher has finished a single postseason with at least 9 appearances in a single postseason without allowing a run. So it's happened 12 times. However, the record is 11.
11.
11. Yes.
11 postseason appearances in a single postseason.
Scoreless, yes.
Without giving up a run.
Yes. Who named that pitcher?
Wow.
Yeah. So he's still 2 away. So he could potentially break it before the end of this World Series. However, he's been used a lot, and their bullpen is taxed. So currently the record is 11 by who or whom? Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Do you have any ideas?
I do. I have an idea.
All right. So hopefully this will be a little bit easier than last week's impossible question. Again, there's got to be a way to find that on the stats. I mean, I'm barely scratched the surface on Baseball Reference. Was able to do that. The less than 2 strikes, man on third though, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a rabbit hole.
It really is. I mean, you start getting into those numbers, there's so many to find. But yeah, I do have an idea. I think I've got 3 different possibilities that come immediately to mind. But, we'll see.
Alrighty. On that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.
World Series ball, baby.